Good morning.
It's good to see everyone. I shared this morning, I had a director of music who once told me to stop apologizing before I sang. She was like, you know, no matter what you do, if you're presenting something, don't apologize. I'm going to start off this morning by apologizing. I was almost late for the 9 o'clock service because I couldn't find my glasses. And you could probably see, I still haven't found my glasses. It worked out okay. It worked out okay at the 9 o'clock, so we're probably fine. But just know that, you know, if I stumble, there's a reason. All right, so my message this morning is entitled, Don't Fence Me In, God. I'm sure that many of you have seen those roadside billboards that purport to be delivering messages from God. They got a solid black background with white letters shouting to motorists supposed quotes from God. Things like, don't make me come down there, or my way is the highway. Now, as cute as they may be, with the exception of a few like, what part of thou shalt not do you not understand, or I love you, and you, and you, and you. With the exception of a very few, most of them just aren't very biblical. As a matter of fact, the people who are creating these signs really should read the signs themselves from time to time, because one of their signs actually says, have you read my number one bestseller? Well, based on the signs that say things like, keep using my name in vain and I'll make rush hour longer, I have to say, no. No, they haven't actually read your number one bestseller. Because one, name in vain doesn't actually mean that. And two, the God that Jesus teaches us about is a God of love, not a God of petty spitefulness. I'd like to see signs that are based on biblical understandings of God. Signs that are more interested in the biblical reality than on pithy platitudes. Now, admittedly, they probably wouldn't be as cute. I mean, who can't help but smile just a little bit at the sign that says, let's meet at my house on Saturday before the game. They might not be as cute, but they certainly would be more honest if they were what the Bible has to say about God. Today's text seems to me to be the perfect opportunity for such a sign. In 2 Samuel, we have the story of a God who doesn't want to be fenced in. God says, do not build me a house and try to contain me. I live in a tent and always will. So, today's title of my message is my version of God's billboard. That's what they call those, God's billboards. And it would simply say, don't fence me in, God. Not as cute, but a little more biblical. Now, in our text, God says, I live in a tent, not a stationary house. And you know what? For the life of me, I can't figure out why God would want to live in a tent. The current headlines alone should be enough to discourage this kind of thinking. In Kenya, in Uganda, in Jordan, even in the U.S., in what we call tent cities, thousands upon thousands of people live in tents. Not because they want to, but because they choose to. Not because they choose to, but because that they have to. It's not a desirable kind of living. For example, early on in the first or in the last Iraqi war, NPR interviewed a man living in a developing tent city on an area that was roughly the size of 3 football fields. And every one of them are there waiting to see a doctor. And the man they talked to was there because he had no other choice. And as they talked to him, they sat in the shade of the entrance flap of his tent. And in the coolness of that shadow, it still reached well over 100 degrees. Why would you want to live in a tent? Those who dwell in tents, it would seem, must be prepared to deal with the harsh realities of the world. On my first camping experience, it was I was camping as a Cub Scout. First time I'd ever been on a camping trip. And his memory sort of sticks with me pretty clearly. It was on this wooded edge of a field. So, you know, it was far enough away from home and there were enough trees that it really felt like the wilderness, sort of, for our first time. It was a really fun evening. We had a campfire with skits and stories. And when night fell, we all decided to pack it into our tents. Now, I slid into my sleeping bag. I snuggled up with my pillow, which was actually a stuffed animal in the shape of a pillow. And with the comfort of my pillow-shaped teddy bear and the gentle lullaby of the nighttime chorus outside of my tent, I drifted into a peaceful slumber. I am not sure what woke me up first, or what I noticed first when I woke up. It was either the fact that it was still very dark, or that the side of my face, which rested on my pillow-shaped teddy bear, was as wet as the pillow itself. It was pouring rain, and I was sleeping in a tent that was not very good at keeping the rain out. If anything, it was very good at keeping the rain in. I don't actually remember much of the rest of that night. I know I was wet from head to toe, and I know that I wanted four walls and a ceiling. Why would anybody want to live in a tent? Those who dwell in tents, it would seem, must be prepared to deal with the harsh realities of the world. In our reading today from 2 Samuel, David wanted to build a house for God. Four walls and a ceiling. You see, King Hiram of Tyre, in recognition of David's kingship, had just finished building a home for him out of the most expensive timbers. And when David realizes that he's living in the lap of luxury and the ark of God was placed in a tent, well, he felt sort of ashamed. After all, who would want to live in a tent, right? And besides that, as far as he was concerned, all that he had, all that he was, he owed to God. Yet God was in a tent while he had a home of cedar. So David decides to build a place of dwelling for God. And God, as often is the case, has a different plan. God sends word to David saying, I have never lived in a house and I will not live in a house. Have you ever read the defining work of the renowned theologian, Dr. Seuss, Green Eggs and Ham? I imagine he would have envisioned the discussion this way. Would you, could you in a house? I would not, could not in a house. Not in the light, not in the night, not with some people, not with a steeple, not with walls, not with laws. I would not, could not, in a house. I do not like them, Sam, I am. You see, God is very clear. God does not want a house. Instead, God says, I move about in a tent. Not I live in a tent. Not my home is a tent. But I move about in a tent. Don't fence me in. What could it mean? Well, once again, I'll turn to the renowned theologian Dr. Seuss. See, in Green Eggs and Ham, Seuss is teaching more than rhyme and syncopation. The ultimate point of the story is that, in the end, a new way of thinking revealed a larger possibility. Limiting ourselves to one way of thinking, I do not like Green Eggs and Ham, precludes us from the possibility of a newer and larger perspective. Say, I like Green Eggs and Ham. I do, Sam, I am. Limiting ourselves to one way of thinking, fencing ourselves in and our God in to look at the world through one window precludes us from the possibility of new and larger perspectives. Perspectives like God loves us all. God moves about in a tent. God moves as God wills. God does not like to be fenced in. God is not locked into one place, one window through which to see the world. God moves about in a tent, gaining a new perspective with each and every step. Living in a tent, God's prepared to deal with the harsh realities of the world. You see, our God is a living God, not a stagnant God, packing up camp, and when needed, making a move towards people where they are. Ours is a God of portable love who moves about in a tent, breaking down walls and envisioning new ways. This God sheds the shackles of the establishment and blazes new paths of peace and love into the world. That should probably sound a little familiar. One who has no home, bound to no one, who wanders from place to place, freeing the world from the bindings of the old law and offering a new way. See, it would seem that Jesus himself followed God's example of moving about in a tent, gaining a new perspective on the world by picking up tent and moving to new places. God and Jesus were not going to be hemmed in by walls, staying in one place, being comfortable with things as they are, would have stagnated them. But ours is a living God, always doing a new thing. Anyone who is in Christ is a new creation. The old life is gone and the new life has begun. Basically, we have to take the image of God's place of dwelling a step further, though. See, yeah, Jesus tears down walls, leaving no one on the outside. But biblically, we must consider something even more radical than that. We are to be God's tent. Not a temple, a church with walls, but our flesh, our hearts, our souls. It is the only way for a living God, and it isn't as pleasant as it might seem at first. If God does not live in walls, but in us, if God does not live in a temple, but in a tent, who does that call us to be? What does that look like? The answer is a little bit frightening, and it requires a lot of faith. To be the dwelling place of God, we must be willing to pick up camp and move. If we feel like we're settling down, becoming comfortable with where we are, with who we are, and yes, even about our relationship with and understanding of God, we're probably becoming too stagnant for a living God. We have to move, do a new thing. According to poet Oliver Wendell Holmes, the greatest thing in this world is not so much where we are, but in what direction we are moving. Let me read that again. The greatest thing in this world is not so much where we are, but in what direction we are moving. Living inside our four walls with a one-windowed world perspective does not take the spirit of the living God seriously. We need to learn to see multiple possibilities, to pick up camp and meet people where they are, to step out on faith and risk doing a new thing. So then you might ask, what is in store for us if we step out of our comfort, out of the comfort of how things have always been? What's in store for us if we take on a new perspective and new ideas? What's in store for us when we walk out those doors, leaving our one-windowed world perspective behind? What's in store for us? Well, I don't know if I'm fully qualified to give a complete answer on that, but it is, I know, a journey that I want to be on. So instead of trying to answer the question myself, I will turn again to the great theologian Dr. Seuss. I think if asked the question, what will happen today when we walk out those doors, making a commitment to God and to ourselves to do a new thing? I think that if we were to do that and ask the question, Dr. Seuss would reply by quoting his own work. Congratulations, today is your day. You're off to great places. You're off and away. You have brains in your head and feet in your shoes. You can steer yourself in any direction you choose. Oh, the places you will go. On and on you will hike, and I know you'll hike far and face up to your problems, whatever they are. And you, will you succeed? Yes, you will indeed. 98.75% guaranteed. Presbyterian Church of the Covenant, you will move mountains. So, Be your name Buxom or Bixby or Bray or Mordecai, Ali, Van, Allen, O'Shea. You're off to great places. Today is your day. Your mountain is waiting. So get on your way. Today, when we walk out those doors, let's make a commitment to God, to each other, to ourselves, to do a new thing. Say, I will no longer live inside four walls with a one-windowed world view. I will no longer try to fence God in. If you do, Church of the Covenant, you'll move mountains. Today and every day is your day.